Think on these things, for in the life that lies before you now, you shall again be called upon to choose your path, to be the architect of your own destiny, and as you shall suffer the one or the other of your passions to sway you, so shall your pathway turn to darkness or to light, to heaven above or to the depths of hell below. The voice ceased. I gazed around me and perceived that the valley was full of light. The mists were gone, and around me on every side rose palace after palace of colossal size, yet aerial and transparent as the fleecy clouds upon a summer sky, rainbow-hued, and glistening in the dazzling light that now filled the valley, till they looked like fairy palaces in a dream. The delicate pillars, the graceful porticos, the golden gates, the snow-white roofs, all distinct and clear yet fragile as a gossamer and aerial as rainbow-tinted vapor. Vast beyond the power of sight to follow, appeared the confines of this valley. Stretching onward and ever onward were these cities of men's thoughts and hopes, their passions and desires, floating like cities built in the clouds, while in and out, backward and forward, through these colossal buildings floated the mighty genii whom I had so dimly seen at first. Here there would be a palace of blood-red marble, its windows glowing like furnaces, its gates like white hot iron. Around this there hovered myriads of genii of the blood-red star of revenge. Beyond that there glittered the purple and golden palace of ambition, and next it, the green and copper-tinted palace of envy and jealousy. Each star and each passion had its corresponding palace which seemed to afford a dwelling place for the genii of that star. The glow of light that filled the valley was like prismatic waves changing to every hue of the rainbow and suffusing the scene with first one glow of color and then another. I gazed on the strange scene with a mixture of wonder and delight as palace after palace was revealed today. And then suddenly, even as I gazed, it all crumbled into dust. The walls of the palaces were shattered as by an earthquake, and a foul swamp seemed to open and swallow them up. The radiant light gave place to a misty vapor, heavy and fetid as though it blew from an open graveyard, pestilential as from a plague-stricken city of the dead. The heavy mist rolled on like a sea till it shut me in on every side, and wrapped me round as with a mantle of darkness. Chapter 3, The Downward Path and the Dark Angel. As the darkness shut me in, I heard a voice that I recognized to be that of Queen Artemisia, calling aloud and invoking curses upon my name. At the sound of that voice, my recollection of the past and of my death grew suddenly clear. The memory of all my unsatisfied ambitions, all my unfulfilled hopes, all my many wrongs, my ruined life, my dishonored wife, my murdered mother, my own untimely end, surged like a sea of passion across my soul. Silhouetted like pictures traced in fire and blood, I saw the events of my life thrown upon the dark screen of mist around me. The last picture of all was that of Artemisia as she sat beside my dying body and dabbled her hands in my life's blood. The bitter hatred of that moment, the impotent and unconquered thirst for the revenge of which I had been so long balked, awoke with tenfold power within my soul, and with a great cry of rage I rose to my feet. And stretching forth my hands I called aloud to heaven and to hell in the name of justice to grant me vengeance. Yea, though it should take a thousand years to accomplish, and though the slaking of my thirst should sink my own soul to the lowest depths of hell. As I uttered my impious prayer, the ground beneath my feet trembled as though a mighty volcanic shock had shaken it. A great chasm opened before my feet, and a great gulf seemed to separate me from the spot whereon I had stood. There was the rushing sound as of a great host, the hurried flight of myriads of winged creatures towards me, and then a great blaze of red light. The sudden glow as of a mighty star seemed to rend the mantle of darkness around me, and like a figure of flame, clad in robes of crimson and purple, I saw the dark angel once more. No longer veiled was that majestic countenance. As clearly as the sun lights up the earth at noonday did the fiery light which surrounded him illuminate each feature, and show me how the fierce flames of passion had seamed and scarred every feature, marring the beauty of what even yet was a type of the most perfect manly beauty. The eyes almost scorched me with the intense passion of their gaze, yet did I not flinch from their regard, but answered him with a look almost as proud and passionate as his own. The deep, full tones of his voice seemed to vibrate through my soul and awaken yet fresh echoes of anger within me, As he said, "Behold, I am come. Say in what manner I can assist you." And I answered him, "O, angel of darkness, I seek revenge upon mine enemies. I desire to reign here as a king, since I can no longer reign on earth. I look to you to aid me, since you art mighty, and you hast responded to my call. And dost you not fear," said he slowly, "to call upon the dark angels to help you? Doth not the terror of death lie even yet upon your soul, since you art in death's kingdom? Hast you no longings left for heaven, since you art so ready to plunge thyself into hell? In heaven Artemisia doth not dwell. She can no more enter there than can I myself. Whether she is yet on earth I know not, but this I know, that I am surely in hell, and here will I await her till she and I have adjusted the bitter measure of the debt between us. I could not live in heaven were it its doors to open to me now, and know that by entering therein, I resigned my chance of meeting her. Paradise could have no joys for me while the fires of revenge consume my soul." The dark angel laughed a bitter savage laugh of exultant malice, as he replied, "Of a truth you art worthy to become one of my followers. Even I can feel no deeper hate than your. But tell me, what wilt you give me in exchange if I grant your wish? Wilt you sell thyself to be my slave?"
"Your slave?
No. I have said that I would be a king. Is any man truly a king who holds himself the slave of one, even so powerful as you? I could not promise to be the slave of any, for I could not keep that promise, and dear as is my vengeance to my soul, I cannot make false promises to attain it. If you will aid me, I will give you the best service that is mine to give. I will serve you till the debt is paid, with interest a thousandfold. I will sit at your feet as one who sits at the feet of a great master, and I will serve you as a soldier serves his general. More I cannot say, for more I would not do. If you wilt not give me your aid, then must I find other means to gain mine ends, for if I have to live through all the ages of eternity to gain my desires, I shall not cease to strive for them." For some moments the dark angel answered me not, but fixing his hollow eyes upon my face gazed at me with a look half wondering and half sad. Then with a deep sigh he said, "Eternity. But oh, man, fresh from earth life, can it be that you dost indeed realize what an eternity can mean?"
"Ah, no. None can, save those who have watched the slow ages roll on unchanging arm unchanged. I might refuse you aid upon the terms, which you dost offer, but I am attracted by the boldness of your spirit, which had much in affinity with mine own, and as I have aided you in the past, so will I aid you again, to work out your own damnation and garner for thyself the bitterest fruits of the tree of knowledge. Behold the followers whom I will assign to you, and if you canst control so wild a crew, and bend their wills to your, then of a truth shall you be worthy to reign with me in these dark spheres." He waved his hand, and as one sees the tail of a comet stretching far out across a night sky, so did I see a vast train of fiery spirits sweep downwards to the glowing star, which encircled the dark angel. Then did he wave his hand thrice over my head, as though in some awful mockery of a benison, while his voice rang out in strident tones this command unto his followers: "Serve ye this man, this newly arrived son of mortality. Teach him the secrets of the dark spheres, and serve him even as ye would serve me. Fare ye well, or rather fare ye ill, for naught but evil comes to those who seek the gifts and friendship of the dark angels." Chapter 4. I meet Megabesus. As the dark angel vanished, I turned to look at the motley band of servitors, which he had assigned to me, wondering much how I was to learn the qualities and capabilities of each, and how, without such knowledge, I was to control this volcanic mass of sentient beings, which gathered around me like a great ring of evil, standing aloof from personal contact in attitudes of respectful fear. While I contemplated them, as a general surveys the forces at his command, an aged spirit stepped out from the throng and prostrated himself at my feet in a salutation of the most abject humility. His figure, though bent with age, was large and powerful, his hair and beard long and flowing and white as snow. His face, yellow and crinkled as old parchment, bore nevertheless the stamp of great intellectual power. The eyes, which looked up at me from their hollow sockets, were bleared and dull, and watched my face with the furtive cunning of a ferret. A dull ferocity of suppressed passion was expressed in the tightly compressed lips and hard lines about the mouth, while the whole countenance bore the impress of the most degraded sensuality and wickedness, and yet there were traces in his face of a spirit that had once been noble and that had some kinship to my nature. As I signed to him to rise, and bade him speak, he stood up, but still keeping his head bowed before me, said, "Most gracious prince, for only to a prince would our great master, the Dark Angel, assign so great a train as he had given you. Most gracious prince, if it pleases you to hear me, I would fain instruct you in all things concerning these wondrous beings of the astral plane who are assigned to you as servants. Behold, on earth I was a mighty sorcerer, who once, alas, followed knowledge for its own sake. Then I was tempted, and I fell, and turned my knowledge to evil purposes alone. Thus have I come here, and therefore must I dwell within these dark regions. Yet even here knowledge is power, and by its aid I bend to my will those whom I desire to serve me. I have studied here upon this further shore of the dark river of death the subjects, which engross thoughts on earth, and in correcting many errors I have gained a degree of power undreamed of in the life of earth. Much of this knowledge I will impart to you, since it is the command of the Dark Angel that I should do so. I will be your guide through these dark regions, and none can guide as well as he who had himself traversed in earth life every step of the winding paths of forbidden knowledge. And, if I may ask the questions, who was you in your earth life? How long hast you been a dweller in these spheres? Alas! Ages upon ages have I dwelt here. The earth was but young when I was born into its life, and though I lived for many centuries beyond the allotted span of man's days, yet was my long life but as a mere drop in the great ocean of time through which I have existed. Who was I? Ask not that question. Let my name and memory be buried in oblivion. Let none know what is the fate of one who was esteemed the wisest magician of his age. But if you wouldst know somewhat of my personality, I may tell you that it was I who wrote the parchment scroll that was taken from the grave of Adam and given unto your master Jalal ad-Din, and it was I who snatched that scroll from your hand when you did sit beside your watchfire on the lonely plain, and sought to read the secrets never meant for your eyes to see. He paused, and his voice trembled with passion as he spoke, while the dull eyes lighted up for a brief moment with the fire of youth and anger as he thought of the great secret I had so nearly stolen from the keeping of the dead. Then the fire died out of voice and eyes, and the dull impassive expression of calm malignity came upon his face once more, and he stood silent at my side. And did you then ever influence my master Jalal ad-Din in his studies, for he admired the teachings of your earth life much? Jalal ad-Din I have influenced at times, he replied, but it was difficult to impress him clearly. With a great thirst for occult knowledge, he did not possess the needful powers, and he was so fond of studying the records of those who had explored the path before him, so ready to adopt all their teachings as infallibly correct, that I found it impossible to correct through his agency the errors for which I was responsible, and which arose through the imperfect sight, which is the bane of all who would explore the wonders of the unknown world of the astral plane from the earthly side of life. Few, very few, who possess the needful clearness of sight ever learn how to use it successfully. Still fewer have the indomitable will and the unquenchable thirst for knowledge, which will carry them through all the dangers and trials and disappointments, and the infinite toil and labor, involved in these studies. The gifts of etherealized soul sight are seldom or never combined with the sterner qualities of the great student, therefore it is that the student has to depend upon the revelations given him by others. His data are all based upon the supposition that these soul seers have told him truly and correctly all they saw, and in most cases, even where all possible care has been taken, the clairvoyants will see either a reflection of a mixture of their own thoughts with the visions shown, or the thoughts of those who are their earthly teachers. You hast served in a temple in your youth. You must know that though I am evil, yea, very evil, as are all those who serve the Dark Angel, yet in my thirst after knowledge I ever sought for truth, and only truth, and the love of the true knowledge is yet strong within me, the desire to impart it is as great as ever. Therefore, when I beheld you, and read the intense passion of discontent, which consumed your soul, the wild longings of ambition, the fierce thirst for independence and for power, I was attracted to you, and I sought by all means to draw nearer and still nearer, that I might draw you from the shelter of the temple's walls and turn your footsteps till they should cross the path of my pupil Jalal ad-Din. I sought to guide you to him, and though other influences intervened to delay my purpose for a time, I at last succeeded. Had not ambition and your desire for earthly grandeur been a stronger influence than your thirst for knowledge, I should have tried through you to give to the world the teachings I could not give through Jalal ad-Din. Again was his face lighted up by the enthusiasm awakened by this subject, which, even amidst the hopelessness of his awful surroundings, had power to awaken his interest and beguile his thoughts for a time from a sense of his degradation. I could not refrain from contemplating the strange character of this man, who, essentially evil in all other desires, could yet retain so pure a love of truth in the pursuit of knowledge. And I asked myself whether this one ray from the star of truth might not someday, perhaps prove a rope of light to raise him even from this dark sphere. Chapter 5, My OLD Master, Teachings on the Dematerializing of Objects and the Prolongation of Life in Earth Bodies. You dost speak of Jalal ad-Din, said I, where is he now, this man? What had become of his spirit? How has he passed the time, which had elapsed since his death? I would fain know of these things, and also by what agency he met his death. Come with me and I will show you Jalal ad-Din, he replied. But first dismiss your many followers, for we do not require their presence, and you canst recall them to you at will. I bethought me of some of the expressions by which Jalal ad-Din had been wont to summon or dismiss these low astral spirits whom he had learned to control, and making use of one of them, I saw all the strange beings who had hung around us while we talked, suddenly vanish like a dark cloud. Then taking me by the hand, the spirit who was guiding me rose in the air, and as I followed with him I saw that we were traveling by a widely ascending spiral path to a large globe that I knew to be the Earth. In a very few moments we alighted upon it, and I found that we were in the deserted garden of the house, which had belonged to Jalal ad-Din. But what a different place it seemed when viewed from the spiritual side of life. No mere decay of years could have so appallingly stamped upon it the evil nature of the deeds of which its walls had been the silent witnesses. The corruption of those who had dwelt there seemed to have infested the house as with the plague of leprosy, and draped the walls in the foul shimmer of a stagnant pool whose waters hid the still more loathsome corruption of the decaying corpses of murdered men. The garden was a vast wilderness of poisonous weeds, rank, unholy trees, exhaling an odor more deadly than the baneful upas tree, had sprung up around the house. The whole air was tainted with an infection more subtle than that of the plague, more swift in destruction than the most deadly gas. In the great branches of these trees huge birds of prey sat brooding, like vultures enjoying the rank odor of the carrion below. Horrible creatures of every conceivable shape and kind crawled or fluttered amongst the poisonous weeds. Awful beings of the astral plane sought shelter within the crumbling walls of the accursed house, and wraith-like figures of the many mortals whom Jalal ad-Din had poisoned and killed by divers means haunted the deserted rooms and wandered through the silent passages, attracted by the magnetism of the man whose arts had killed them. Could I have cried aloud unto mankind and proclaimed how terrible a plague spot was this house, and how deadly a miasma breathed from its decaying walls, I would have bade them level it to the ground and consume it and the foul garden in one great funeral pyre, and scatter the ashes to the four winds of heaven, rather than leave it thus to become a focus of corruption from whence exhaled a poison more destructive than any earthly poison could be, a center from which could radiate the influences most fatal to the spirit. But I was dead. To my voice all mortal ears were deaf forevermore. As I turned from the house something large and dark rose from the ground beside the fountain, and began to drag itself along the ground with slow and painful movements of its body, like those a snake makes as it wriggles along. Something, that as it drew near I saw to be in size and form like unto a man, clothed in dark rags like tattered cobwebs. The face was bent towards the ground, and the hands, like claws, were used to dig into the ground as the figure drew itself slowly towards me. Then the head was raised for a moment to look at us, and as with a savage cry of rage the figure raised itself slightly to look more closely, I recognized the swollen and distorted features of my late master Jalal ad-Din. Fiercely he struggled to rise up to attack me, but his limbs were powerless to bear his weight, and with a moan of savage anguish he sank on the ground once more, and made frantic efforts to wriggle to my feet to clutch at me. Horrified at the sight of his awful condition, I addressed him, and asked him why he displayed such animosity towards me, since I had come to see him in all friendliness. Friendliness? He hissed out savagely in hoarse, broken gasps. What friend of mine was you to leave me at the very instant when success was about to crown the efforts of many years? What friendship had you? Who could desert me at that crisis, and consign me to this worse than death? Avaunt! Or I will rend you in a thousand pieces. Were I but able I would tear you limb from limb. Nay, be not so savage with me, said I, for thou dost forget, surely, that to give you the life you did crave, meant that I should die instead of you. I knew not this when I left you alone, 'tis true. I did but follow the fair vision of my guardian angel, who led me from my room, and that you was dead ere I returned filled me with remorse and sorrow, until I read the first part of the mystic scroll. Then did I see the fate you had meant for me, and, which engulfed thyself instead. Yet, O my once master, let us forget the past, and tell me whether there is aught I can do to help you now? Jalal ad-Din's answer was a savage snarl like a wild beast as he turned and wriggled away from us again, and disappeared behind the broken fountain. The spirit beside me, who was known in the spirit world by the name of Mansur, touched me on the arm. Behold, said he, Jalal ad-Din had gone into his treasure house, there to resume his watch over the baubles, which he had collected in his earthly life, and, which he doth not yet know to be valueless to him now. He thinks that you art yet in the body of the flesh, for his sight, like his other powers, is but imperfect, and he fears that you art come to steal some of his treasures. Then I remembered how I had already come and taken away certain parchment scrolls, dreaming that the dead had no longer property in the goods that once belonged to them, and I resolved to go to where I had hidden them and restore them to Jalal ad-Din since he still valued them so highly. My thought must have been read by Mansur, for he laughed derisively as he said, "Go to, you too honest thief. Go and look at those hidden scrolls, for it is no longer possible for you to lift one corner of the very least of them. You art in the spirit body now, and canst not affect aught, which is still enclosed in its material shell as in a locked treasure case. But to return to Jalal ad-Din. Tell me why it is that he crawls thus upon the earth? Surely the reason is not alone because his life was evil?" My companion laughed a mirthless laugh, as he replied, "I see that you dost think that I am myself to the full as evil as he was, yet I grovel not upon the earth. Even so. But it is not because of his many sins that he crawls thus, or else the dark spheres would be peopled by human reptiles. No. But Jalal ad-Din, when he sought to prolong his life far beyond the ordinary life of man, did not know that thereby he was imprisoning his spirit in the mortal shell long after it had grown too confined to hold it. If you dost take a growing child and place it in a box that fits tight over all its limbs, so that it can neither develop nor make use of its muscles for its own support, then will the body of that child become deformed, its muscles and its limbs will wither away, and it will either die or become like one stricken with a palsy, whose impotent limbs can in no wise obey the desires of its mind. So had it been with Jalal ad-Din. So is it with all who seek ignorantly to change nature's laws. By clinging to the mere earthly shell, because it seemed to him a means of life, he retarded the development of the spirit, and so crippled it that many years, yea, many centuries, must elapse ere it regains the full vigor that should belong to a man endowed at first with such strength as was his. Look upon me, behold my gray hairs, my bent form, and know that I also, when I renewed again and again my earthly life, made the mistake Jalal ad-Din did, and it had taken me these many centuries of spirit life to win back even the strength I now possess, which, after all, is but that of an old man, and wonder not that I sought to destroy all traces of that manuscript in which I detailed the means, which had led to mine own destruction. Sin had me in her clutches. The love of evil, the desire to enjoy still the sinful pleasures of mine animal soul is yet so strong in me that I could not exchange my present lot for all the pure joys of paradise, were it possible that its gates would open to me now. I have not one desire in affinity with the pure lives of the saints of paradise. The gulf between us is impassable. Therefore think not that it was with the thought of doing even one good action that I snatched that scroll from your hand that you should learn the secret it contained. No. It was only that I desired not that the monstrous error of supposing that to renew the poor earthly shell was to endow the immortal spirit with fresh life should be any longer associated with me or my studies. For you and for Jalaluddin I cared not. The dark angel, who is my master here, might have led you both into the bottomless pit of destruction and I should not have raised one finger to prevent him. But when he took the miskting scroll from the grave where I deemed it hidden forever, and sent it forth to propagate an error in my name, then was my wrath aroused, and I rested not till I had torn it from your keeping. Let us go hence, he added after a pause, let us go hence, for as yet you canst do no good to Jalaluddin. Only time can help him. If you hast any other one you dost desire to see, think of them, and your own desire will take us there. Then I bethought me of Prince Ahmed, who had slain me, and of the faithful friend Ben Azulid, who had come too late to save me. And lastly I thought of Zuleika, and longed to know her fate, and whether she had shed even one tear over my untimely end. Chapter 6, I find Zuleika. As Mansur had said, my thoughts carried us to Agbatana, where I beheld Ahmed in all the glory of his position as king. Towards him my feelings were not particularly bitter. He had ever been an open foe, and in my death did but carry out the policy I had expected of him. We had each played our game to gain a throne. He had won and I had lost, that was all. I paused not long with him. An unseen shadow, I stood among his throng of courtiers, and but for the recollection of myself, which my presence caused to some among the crowd, none felt any consciousness of my presence. From the palace my thoughts carried me far away to a small fortress in the mountains. Here I found that Ben Azulid had retired, and was spending the evening of his life in the calm studies of a philosopher, and though my presence and touch could not make him conscious that my spirit stood beside him in very fact, he nevertheless seemed to feel that I was somehow near him, for he got up, and looking half uneasily over his shoulder to where I stood, said in a low tone, "Strange, strange indeed is this feeling that comes over me. I could almost have vowed that soul of my dead master's much loved son Ayn Zaman had returned to earth again. Methought he was here but now. I had almost forgotten he was dead, alas! Like all whom I have loved." He sighed deeply and turned again unto his books, while I glided from the room, moved almost to tears by the sound of affection in his voice. The image of Zuleika rose before me now, and I soon found that I was entering the palace of Pasaikhad, and floating towards the haunted wing. As with the house of Jalaluddin, this part of the palace wore, to my spiritual eyes, the stamp of more than mere mortal ruin and decay. The hangings upon the walls were ragged, and stained with blood, and bore, as pictures engraved upon them, the scenes of treachery and murder enacted within the rooms. The floors of polished marble were slippery with pools of blood, and deep holes like pitfalls seemed to gape on every side. I crossed over to the secret passage, and there within it beheld Zuleika sleeping, clothed in the black mantle, which had enshrouded her in my last vision in Jalaluddin's mirror. For I knew now, alas, that it was she whom I had seen imprisoned as in a narrow vault, tearing up the ground with her fingernails, and beating on the hard walls in her death agony. Alas! And alas! I read all the fearful story as I looked at the grim walls wherein her terrible struggles for liberty, her slow agony of starvation and dreadful death, were all mirrored. None had guessed that she was imprisoned there. Few had even missed her. And not till Ahmed, roused at last from his conquests to the memory of the woman he had professed to love, inquired for her, did it at last dawn upon anyone that she and not some lost spirit from the dark regions had uttered those terrible shrieks, which for days had rung through the deserted wing and penetrated like faint echoes to the other part. Then when Ahmed caused the place to be searched, none knew the secret of the hidden door. There were no cries now to guide them, for the silence of the place was the silence of death. Thus even Xiu Lieka's body was never found, and her fate remained a mystery whose solution could only be guessed by the shuddering seekers for her.